Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Sean Broderick, senior editor at WeissRatings.com. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Thanks for having me on.
Sean, what's the story with uranium?
Well, that had a heck of a move on Wednesday, and I actually saw news stories trying to link this to the latest announcements by the U.S. government, that kind of thing. No, that's completely wrong. The reason that uranium stocks took off is because of what happened over in Kazakhstan. What happened there was they changed the tax rate for uranium mining to more closely match what they have on oil and gas extraction. And so nominally, that changes the tax rate from about 6% to 9%. But the thing of it is, the more you produce at a mine, then the higher the tax rate. And if you are producing something like, say, 40,000 metric tons a year, then you'd be paying 18% tax. So what they'll be doing, and this is on all the joint venture properties that we have with various companies, including Cameco, which really isn't being priced into Cameco. It's mainly being priced in over there, which is kind of strange, but maybe people have this more figured out than I do. But what this means is that they're going to have each line produce up to the limit of each additional tax grab and not go over it. So that's like a limit on how much they're actually going to produce. Now, they were already having problems, as you know, because they use acid to leach the uranium out of the ground over there rather than our carbonated water, which is what we use in North America. It's a horrible system, but we aren't going to get into that. But they couldn't get enough acid anyway. I heard that that was being straightened out, but now this is really a kick in the teeth to future production. And so rates are going up in 2025, so it's near term. That's the thing we have to really have to key on, is that there are many longer-term bullish things about uranium, but there was nothing short-term to really give uranium prices and uranium stocks a spark. But this is a short-term spark. People can see the tax regime changing next year, and that's the adjustment we're seeing in the market, is that we aren't going to see any more uranium coming from over there. I mean, they'll still be producing, just not raising their production. And so that makes those stocks over here look more attractive.
Well, yes, the law that Biden brought in is that the U.S. is going to ban imports of uranium from certain countries. What exactly does that work?
Well, you know, I mean, we don't want to be dependent on, like, Russian uranium, right? So, hang on a minute. That's the ban. I mean, it's not a horrible ban, especially if you want to stimulate uranium production in friendlier places. So that's basically what's going on. Of course, Russia will sneak its uranium out through other countries, Kazakhstan, for example, stuff like that. So who knows how good that enforcement would be. Certainly the enforcement on, say, Russian oil and gas exports has only been limited success at best, you know. So I'd expect about the same amount of success for Russian uranium exports. However, that did make people feel optimistic, but at the time, it didn't really move uranium stocks a lot. This is what's moving uranium stocks now. This news about the change in the tax regime over in Kazakhstan.
Precious metals. Is gold still a great thing to get into right now?
I like gold so much right now, but I like silver more. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. We have global uncertainty, I mean, all kinds of things at play, whether in Europe or Africa or you name it. Then we have the federal deficit not getting any better, and no matter who wins, it's going to get worse. In fact, if Trump gets back into the White House, the changes he's proposed will make the deficit much worse. And I think a lot of people think that he might win, so that kind of puts a boost under gold. And then we have the election. There's so much uncertainty about that and how the U.S. economy might react to who wins, you know? And so that makes gold look really good by comparison just because it's more stable. And to that, I'll add, it looks like the Fed is closer to starting to cut interest rates. The reason that's important for gold is that higher interest rates make bonds more attractive. Gold does not pay any yield. So as yields come down on bonds, we can see money start to rotate into other things, including gold. And so, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of forces there. We have the long-term things that you and I have talked about before. Supply and demand, lack of new discoveries, falling grades of existing gold mines. All that stuff is true, and it's all in place. But those are all longer-term things. In the shorter term, I would look at those things I just mentioned. And so I think we are going to see definitely higher prices by the end of the year and maybe much higher prices next year.
Is it important or a factor that gold is now available to the average consumer who walks into Costco or Walmart?
I don't think so. I mean, I hear people talking about that as if it's the next best thing. It was never hard to buy gold. You know, I mean, at least not for me. I know because I've done it plenty of times. Maybe some people found it hard. I guess we'll see. I'm not that concerned about it, really.
Should you do dollar averaging for your gold and silver purchases? Buy a certain amount every month?
That depends on your own investment profile and your cash flow. Certainly, if you have the cash flow, it's not a bad thing to do. And then you don't have to really worry about, am I buying the bottom? And am I buying the top? Just set like a certain amount you want to buy that year and just space it out over, you know, like 12 months. That's fine. It all depends on the individual. I really can't give an answer to that. I think it's a fine way to go, but it might not be right for any particular person.
The government claims consumer prices fell for the first time month to month since the pandemic. Is that a factor in any of these trades?
Yeah, well, that's what is making Wall Street think that the Fed's more likely to cut rates sooner than later. The odds of a September rate cut, I think they're up around 85% now. So few people are expecting a rate cut in July, but September seems very likely. And the Fed doesn't really like to surprise Wall Street. So I think that is a factor. And certain prices have been going down anyway. I mean, used cars are down, officially down 10.1% year over year. If you look at the Manheim index of used cars, that's down more than 20%. Other things are really moving down. There's only one thing that went up month to month, and that's auto insurance. Everything else went down. And so that's a real decline. That's a real noticeable decline. And so that's why people are looking at that, and they are thinking that, you know, we are going to have rate cuts, maybe not just one rate cut, maybe two rate cuts. Also, Fed Chair Powell, when he spoke recently, he said that he wasn't going to have rate cuts beholden to any political calendar, which means that he might cut even right before the election. We don't know. So that's the way Wall Street took it anyway. So again, that makes people think that there'll be maybe more rate cuts than they had been fearing at first.
We'll have more with Sean Brodrick right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Sean Brodrick. Sean, you've noticed a trend in how stocks are developing or being traded. What's the trend?
Oh, yeah. Well, ever since we got that lower inflation news, you might even say deflation news, Thursday morning, money's been rotating out of the mega caps, which had been like the money sucking vacuum all year, right? I mean, that's where all the money went. It's been rotating out of the mega caps and into smaller caps. And that is a good trend. This rally needed to broaden out because it was really only the really largest stocks that were rallying. We need the rally to actually move out to the smaller caps. And so now we're going to have something funny. And you and I are talking midway. We don't know how the day will end, but the major indices are down as I talk to you. But my portfolios are up, way up. I mean, I do have some of the mega caps, but I also have a lot more smaller companies, and they're all outperforming today. I bet a lot of your listeners are going to see the same thing in, like, their portfolios. This is actually very good news for the average investor who isn't a big bank, doesn't own a tremendous amount of, like, NVIDIA stock, stuff like that, is that this rally could broaden out. And why would that happen? Well, it's this higher for longer interest rate regime that the U.S. Fed has been doing is actually very tough on smaller cap stocks because they don't have the big cash flow, the big cash piles that the mega caps have. They often have to borrow money and it's been at higher and higher rates. Now we have the potential that rates could go down and those companies that need to borrow money could actually have an easier time of it. And so that makes smaller caps look more appealing. And just, I think people are just taking profits in the mega cap stocks. It's not that there's anything wrong with them. It's just people have these big profits. They're just banking some of those gains and they're looking for someplace else to put that money to work. And the place they would put it to work is in the stuff that's been undervalued all year. And that would be smaller cap stocks.
And that's where your real innovation comes from, isn't it? If you really want to see a breakout as a smaller cap.
I don't know what you mean by innovation.
Well, you come up with a new idea or concept, and you're trying to develop it into the next big thing.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. I certainly hope it does. It seems like as soon as somebody gets a great idea, then a big cap swoops in and buys a smaller company either to make the idea its own or to completely squash it. Because they don't want that new idea coming along. as an investor, this is good. And the reason is because a rally is not sustainable if only the larger stocks participate. You need a broader stock participation in order for this rally to continue. So we might see the major indices go down for a bit, because they are so heavily weighted to these larger cap stocks. But the broader market, the equal weight indices, those should do pretty well. And so if you just want to buy an index, just want to buy an ETF, look for something equal weight or look for something smaller cap.
What's going on with crude oil right now?
It's kind of biding its time, going sideways. It's in a nice range. I have no problem with the range crude oil is in. The companies I invest in, you know, oil companies, they're doing fine. Now, prices, they aren't going anywhere, but they all pay dividends, so they're going to pay me nice dividends. I did take some gains in the oil space, but that's just because I wanted to put money to work somewhere else. That's all. I still like oil. It is intriguing that the three agencies we listen to about where oil demand is coming from. That's the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That's the International Energy Agency, and that's OPEC Plus. They have no agreement at all over what future oil demand is going to be. It's really kind of weird that they cannot agree on what it is. That might kind of upset the market and make people think, you know, maybe I should go play somewhere else. But I tell you, at current oil prices, many of these stocks are just cash machines. They really are. And so I think investors should give them a second look.
Mm-hmm. Sean, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me on.
My guest has been Sean Broderick, senior editor at WeissRatings.com. If you have any questions for Sean or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.